The person I want to speak to next this morning has been cutting a dash across the country all week long. You may already have heard the superintendent of Yosemite National Park is here because we're twinning our own Wild Neffen Park with the granddaddy of all national parks in California. But this morning I want to move the conversation with her along in a direction that hasn't yet been covered. What is a national park? What is its job? Because we have two new ones that do very different things. We haven't yet properly defined what we mean in this country when we say national park. So, Cicely Muldoon, Superintendent of Yosemite National Park, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Philip. Thanks for having me.
You are about to head off up Croagh-Patrick, aren't you?
I hope so, yes.
Yes, well, you're right to hope so, because I think you've got rain on the way there by about midday. Do you think you can get up and down in that kind of time?
Well, I'll have to walk fast. We'll see what I can do.
Talk to me about national parks. Can you have one that does two things simultaneously, conserving biodiversity and also being a tourist attraction that provides an economic return? Or is there just too great a tension between those two things?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I'd say national parks not only do two things at once, they probably do 20 things at once. These are places that we set aside because they have something very special about them. And usually those special things are not only biodiversity and incredible habitat, but they also tell the stories of the land, people who have been on the land and who are in many cases on the land still. So parks really capture our history, both natural and cultural.
But we want them, on the one hand, to preserve and conserve wilderness and nature for us, but we also want them to serve as places that we can get an economic return for and that will draw people to Ireland and Ireland Inc. How have you reconciled those two different things in California?
Yeah, you know, parks are a massive draw for people from all over the world, Yosemite in particular. I can walk around Yosemite Valley and not hear English spoken sometimes. It's such a draw for people all over the world. Yeah, it's a fine line to walk. Parks belong to everyone, and they're sort of a global, so it is wonderful, and it's good for the communities to bring people in and help the economy for sure. But you have to manage it carefully so that you don't damage those resources that the park was created to protect. It's a tension for sure, but it's manageable. Your work is never done in taking care of that. You have to pay a lot of attention to why the park was created and what you're trying to protect, and in many cases restore and improve, and make sure you don't draw so much human activity that you damage those things that the park was created to protect.
Yosemite is obviously enormous by comparison with any of our national parks. Is that task of conservation and accommodating tourists made easier by that size? I mean, particularly when you look at the size of our parks by comparison.
You know, Yosemite is about 95% wilderness. Unless you're a strong hiker, much of the park is not very accessible. People are really concentrated in places like Yosemite Valley and the Mariposa Grove of giant sequoias. So it's similar to a smaller size park, and where the people go, where the facilities are, is a much smaller area, except for those that are quite adventurous and want to get out into the wilderness. So it's really quite comparable.
The other tension, of course, is that our national parks are, in many areas, living landscapes where people are drawing their livelihoods from the land. How do you reconcile those two things, or can you? Intensive farming or fishing and tourism and conservation?
Good question. It's complicated. It's absolutely complicated. But I think the strongest parks are those who are so embedded with the local community that the community are its greatest protectors. And you can do all those things. It's nuanced, of course. You have to always be thinking about why the park was created and what resources you're trying to protect, what the biodiversity complications are. But people have always been in the landscape. They've always been working on the land, and we are part of the land as well. So I think you can have those two things together.
You, of course, have indigenous communities within Yosemite, don't you? Living on tribal lands, Native American people. Do you think there's any comparison to be drawn between how you have accommodated those people within Yosemite and the communities that are living and working within our national parks?
I really do. We have a dark history with our Native American community, absolutely. But today in Yosemite, we have seven different tribes who call Yosemite home, and we work with them, I would say, every day. We have a tribe working on bringing back a village to Yosemite Valley that they were eradicated from in the late 1960s. So we're really trying to turn the page on the past of how we dealt with indigenous communities and getting smart enough now, I should say, to learn from that traditional ecological knowledge. We work with tribes today to bring back cultural burning, for example, in Yosemite Valley, which the tribes have conducted there for forever, as they have really around the world. Bringing in burning to a landscape helps prevent the catastrophic wildfires we have seen that have come about as a result of climate change. So the knowledge that comes from those communities, those people who have always been on the land, is vast.
That is interesting, isn't it? Because it means then that not only is there this task of providing a living for people, conservation of nature, tourist attraction, but the other job of a national park is to conserve culture, to conserve history, and that impact that man of 100, 200 or 500 years ago has had on the landscape.
Yes, for sure. And happened this week, we took a look at a famine cabin that has been restored, and the last family who died in the famine is preserved there and remembered there. And it's a local story, and the local community is proud and happy that is preserved. But it's also a global story. It's the story of my family, really, who left Ireland generations ago because of that. So it's those small stories of people on the land that really resonate, internationally, I would say.
As we try and do this exercise of defining what it is that an Irish national park should be, there are some purists who say that there should be zero agricultural activity within a national park, that it should be exclusively about preserving nature. Is there, in your mind, an argument? Are there examples in the United States of a national park being the kind of place where you should be testing things like the high nature value farming that we just heard about in Hannah's report there, and fine-tuning those schemes within a national park so that you can roll them out nationally?
Yes, yeah, certainly. Yosemite is an old place. We've set aside in 1864 by President Lincoln. So it's a park that doesn't have those kinds of things. But parks that were created more recently in the United States absolutely embed working landscapes into part of the reason the park was created, part of the stories that we are trying to preserve that tell the stories of the country, much like Ireland is doing. And there's a way to do it. I don't want to pretend that it's super easy, because of course it isn't, but bringing along the local community, engaging with humanity and the management of parks is always evolving. And having people on the landscape is one of those things that's becoming more common in national parks around the world. It builds support, because what we're really trying to do is save these places forever, is save these places for future generations. Mm. We can't do that without the people's support.
So obviously not in Yosemite, but are there other national parks, not just in the United States, but anywhere else that you've seen, that can encompass intensive agriculture or commercial forestry?
Yes. Even in Yosemite, it's not commercial forestry per se, but we do a lot of tree removal because of past human practices. We have we suppressed cutting down trees in the national parks about 120 years ago. It was seen as a bad practice. We suppressed all wildfires, I should say, and that has led to an unnatural condition with a high fuel loading, and to contribute along with droughts and climate change to these catastrophic wildfires we've seen in the United States and really around the world. So I'm drifting away from your question, I think, Philip, but bringing back those practices of selective thinning of the trees and putting prescribed fire on the ground in Yosemite has resulted in a much healthier landscape. So
that is less likely to be devastated by a wildfire. No, I understand. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. You can't just put a fence around a park. You know, it's a living landscape in every regard with all the creatures that inhabit it, I would say, including humanity.
Where are your people from the Muldoons? You have to be Irish or maybe Scottish.
Oh, Irish all the way. You know, we have family from Tipperary and Limerick and Westmeath and Galway, and you've told me Kildare, so I believe you.
Well, yes, I was really rather rude about the number of Muldoons in Kildare when we were talking yesterday, so I apologise once again
like
for
weeds,
that.
Like weeds, I think you said.
Cicely Muldoon, Superintendent of Yosemite National Park, a very good morning to you, and thank you very much for talking to us on Countrywide today. This conversation was something of a curtain raiser for a special programme that we're going to be doing in 2 weeks' time, when we're going to be exploring all of this in our newest national park in County Kerry.